You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to Warriors Off Court, the San Francisco Chronicles NBA podcast. I'm your host, Warriors beat writer Connor Letourneau, and I'm joined today by my boss, assistant sports editor and former Warriors beat writer, Janie Hu. Our guest today is Omer Caspi, who talked with us about why his transition with Golden State has gone so smoothly, and Janie and I will get into Draymond Green's return and the Warriors' Christmas Day game against Cleveland. So it's a Friday afternoon here at the San Francisco newsroom, and we're just a few hours away from Draymond Green's epic return to the lineup. It's been 2 weeks. He's supposed to get back in the lineup against the Lakers tonight. And, you know, a lot has happened in these past 2 weeks. And, you know, the biggest thing that has happened is they've won a lot of games. They're riding a season-long 10-game win streak. Which is kind of crazy when you think about it, because they were without Draymond for, I believe, 5 of the past 6 games. They've been without Steph for, I believe, the past 6 games. And they've been out without Zaza. Well, you can say whatever you want about Zaza Pachulia, but he is a starting center for this team. And they've been without him quite a bit as well. So three starters that they've been without, including 2 All-Stars and 1 2-time MVP and a Defensive Player of the Year, and they're still winning. What have you thought about what they've been able to do in the wake of all these absences?
It's been pretty impressive. The injury report just keeps piling up. Nick Young still out with the concussion protocol as well.
Young's actually not out anymore. He's back. He's been out for a couple games, but
well, I'm just talking about this win streak that they
been on. Sorry.
No worries. And it's, you know, it can't be said enough that they have one of the deepest, if not the deepest teams in the league. And this is what they were built for. Most teams could not withstand the loss of one of their stars. Most teams only have 1 or 2. And this Golden State team just goes 12 deep. You can slot in. You have guys like David West. You have Jordan Bell. One goes down, another steps up. It really helps that the constant through most of this has been Kevin Durant.
Yeah, I mean, it always helps when you have a former MVP waiting in the wings, and he has been absolutely dominant. I mean, his numbers have been insane. I think that the stat was the first 5 games that Curry was out, he had 35 points, 10 rebounds, and 7 assists in 4 of those games. Obviously, not surprisingly, won Western Conference Player of the Week for that first week without Curry. And what's impressed me about Durant in the wake of Curry's injury is not just what he's done from a statistical standpoint, but you see him really being a leader. And by leader, I mean not just showing by example, but, you know, coaching the guys up, you know, really being a little bit more demonstrative, because by nature, Durant is more of a easygoing, lead by example type guy. But there was one quote in a recent game where Caspi basically came up to Durant at halftime and personally thanked him for being so encouraging. And that's leadership, you know. And he does that every day on a certain level, but you've seen him take that to another notch with Curry out. And the thing that I've always been impressed by with Durant is he has a really good understanding of when to go all in, when to be dominant, when to flex his p- powers, if you will, and when to be, you know, to defer a little bit, and when to step back and pass the ball to a Curry if he's available, or a Clay. And you saw, you know, the other night against Memphis, when Clay was going off in that first half, he had 27 points in the first half. For a minute there, I thought we were gonna be witnessing another 60-point masterpiece. He had 29 points in the game, only two in the second half. But Clay, a lot, if you watch the replays of that game, a lot of those shots that he was making were set up by Durant. Durant would find him in the right spot, and you know, he might turn down a good shot to find Clay wide open for a great shot. And so he was making the right decisions. And you know, that's got to be encouraging, because not only does it help that, you know, he can dominate when he needs to, but I think it shows that he's going to be in a better place when Curry does come back.
So one thing that's interesting is when we were talking about Steph being out, Draymond being out, and all the other guys that are stepping up, one name that both you and I omitted was Klay Thompson, and right. He's been a constant there. Right. And so my question for you is, what is he like as a leader, or just, you know, we talk about the Splash Brothers, it's Steph Curry and it's Klay Thompson. Is he just Klay Thompson, happy to go along with everything?
Yeah, I mean, the great thing about Klay Thompson, I'm not sure if everyone fully understands this, because they look at Clay and they see that he loses his train of thought in interviews, and they see that he's, you know, obsessed with his dog, and they just kind of, he's kind of a punchline a little bit. But what you might lose in that is that is why he's great, and that is why he fits this team so well, because you can't have everyone want the spotlight. You can't have everyone wanting the ball. You can't have a bunch of ball dominant superstars, because there is only one basketball.
Right.
And so the great thing about Clay is that he doesn't not only need the spotlight to do what he does, but he doesn't need the basketball. I mean, when he scored 60 points last season, he held the ball for like less than a minute total. I mean, he barely touched the ball. He's led the league the past three seasons in catch and shoot opportunities. And he's phenomenal at working away from the ball, working off screens, and, you know, scoring without even needing the ball. So, but the great thing about him is it's not just the on-court ability to do that, but also off the court, he really would prefer if we never talked to him again. He would prefer just to go home, hang out with Rocco, hang out with his brothers, and just kick it. And, you know, he's still to this day, even though he's been in the league, you know, over half a decade, he's still really uncomfortable with the fact that he's famous.
Right. And you wrote a fascinating story about this when they left for China, about Clay being Clay and the whole China Clay phenomenon, and he just almost, it's oblivious to him, the not drama, but just the popularity that unfolds all around him.
Right. I mean, his best friend, a guy who lives with him, Seth Tarver, who, full disclosure, went to my high school, actually. He gave me an anecdote one time about them going to a Wingstop, and, you know, he knew it was a pretty crowded Wingstop in Oakland, and Seth was like,
"Hey, I know exactly what Wingstop you're talking about."
Yeah, Seth was like, "Hey, I should probably go pick up this order for us just so we can get in and out." And Clay was like, "No, I'll get it." And then he walks in and he's bombarded by, you know, autograph hounds, and he's shocked by it. He doesn't understand, even though this is the daily existence that he lives, right? So it's kind of like, how do you not know that that's going to happen? But that's who Clay is, and that's why everyone in the organization appreciates him, because that's really rare, you know, in this day and age where, you know, there's so many bloated egos and there's so many, you know, guys who think they're better than they are. He just wants to go make some three pointers and, like I said, chill with Rocco. There was actually a really funny, I don't know if you saw this, but there was a funny moment after a game last week where someone asked him about Rocco, and it was a joking kind of lighthearted question, looking for kind of a lighthearted response, and he got really serious and almost emotional, and he was like, you know, Rocco is a blessing in my life, you know, he means so much to me. And it was really heartwarming, but it was just kind of funny because it was such a serious response to such a lighthearted question. But Clay doesn't necessarily pick up on a lot of those cues which is great. I mean, I love covering him, to be honest. He might be one of my favorite people to cover because he's just so unintentionally funny.
All right, I'm going to share one more Clay tidbit, which is the fact that he actually reads a newspaper before every game.
Yes, and he reads the San Francisco Chronicle, if we're going to be honest here. he does read other papers as well. He does read the San Francisco Chronicle. I've got people asking me, why is he doing advertisements for another paper? He does read the San Francisco Chronicle. That I'll go on record saying that. it's the great thing about this team is that there's so many personalities and there's so many different personalities, and they bring so much to the table. And the most demonstrative and loquacious personality is obviously Draymond Green. We all know that. He is the emotional leader of this team, and him being out for 2 weeks was interesting to me because I've said from day one, whenever I do an interview, whenever I go on the radio or do a TV hit, I always get asked, who's the most important player on this team? And I always say Draymond Green, because he brings something that no one else can bring, which is his emotional bravado. On a team filled with mild-mannered personalities, he is the spark plug. He's the glue that makes it all work. So I was really curious. I can't say I was actually curious because I didn't know he'd be out 2 weeks. It was kind of a day-to-day thing for two full weeks. But the fact that they played as well as they did with him out for that long is huge. I mean, because he brings so much both on and off the court to this team.
But wouldn't you say that some of that Draymond intensity and feistiness is rubbing off on players now? Kevin Durant.
Yeah.
We saw emotional displays from him that we just haven't seen before. I mean, leading to ejections even.
Right.
Jordan Bell, we've talked a little mini Draymond in training. Right. But I do think some of that rawness is now floating down.
Yeah, no, I think so. And, you know, Draymond's still there. You know, he's not on the court, but he's on the sideline barking in guys' ears. He was the only guy who was injured who still went to the Lakers game in L.A. Because he just can't be away from it. And he was on the bench barking at Jordan Bell. There was one sequence where we're early in the first half against the Lakers. Jordan Bell bit on a pump fake, and the camera showed Draymond on the sideline just freaking out and going off on him. And as soon as he got pulled out of the game, Draymond was in his ear telling him exactly, not just that he shouldn't jump on the pump fake, but exactly the dynamics of that play and what went into why he did that and why he shouldn't do that. It was a really nuanced explanation that Jordan later relayed to us. And that kind of stuff is huge. But the two biggest takeaways from an individual standpoint with Draymond being out were obviously Jordan Bell and Omer Caspi. So Jordan Bell has been probably the biggest feel-good storyline of the season. We've talked about him at length. I literally can't go a day without being asked about him, I feel. And he continued to do his thing. He had a bunch of, you know, highlights, had really some really nice stat lines in there. But you also saw a little bit more than we've seen earlier in the season, some rookie mistakes. You know, you saw that he is a human being. He is a rookie who's still very much figuring out the game. You know, there's some moments that I know he would have liked to have back.
Right. Well, I think a lot of those rookie mistakes, and they're certainly not limited to Jordan Bell, but a lot of it has to do with focus, forgetting to run back on defense after a play. Those are mistakes that rookies are going to make. And is he now, though, he's making up for them enough, or at least at the rate that Coach Kerr feels comfortable leaving him in a little bit longer, or he knows somebody's going to get in his ear about what he's not doing.
I mean, it's all risk reward, right? And the thing with him is, even though he might have a bad mistake here and there, he's so athletic that he makes up for it.
It's almost unfair in some ways.
I mean, he can do something really stupid, but then he'll do three great things in a row, and you forget about the stupid thing he did, you know, because I think he is one of the best athletes on this team. Steve Kerr said that he's the fastest player on this team, which this is a guy who is, you know, he's 6'9", 224 pounds, and he's the fastest player on this team. You know, his high school coach told me a story one time about when he was in high school, just on a whim, he decided to go out for the track team one day and ran the 400 meters and won the meet, and then it was like, I'm good now. I don't need to actually run track. He could have won state in California, in LA, in the 400 meters, and just didn't really feel like it. But that's the type of athlete we're talking about. And the moment that I think you were referencing was, or at least one of the moments, was the Lakers game when not only did he not run back on defense, but he blocked Brandon Ingram. Brandon Ingram ended up going down pretty hard and got injured. Jordan did not know he was injured at the time, but he was on the ground. He just stared over him and kind of taunted him. And while that was happening, Patrick McCaw ran down on the other end of the court and missed the layup. Jordan Bell, being the player he is, probably would have had that tip dunk right there. But instead he was, you know, taunting an opposing player. And he got reamed out, got pulled out of the game for it. And it was a big learning moment for him. And that's really what this whole season is about. I keep telling everyone, this season is a prelude to the season that actually matters for him. This is all icing on the cake, because next season's when it really matters, when all their centers right now are on one-year deals and they're not currently under contract for next season. So if he does what he needs to do and he continues to make strides, the Warriors are potentially going to feel comfortable not going out and spending a bunch of money in free agency and making him their starting center, or at least a guy who can play 25-plus minutes a night. You know, you don't know if maybe Kerr wants a Zaza or seven-footer to start. But and then the other guy who's been great is Omer Caspi, who we actually got to talk to, you know, earlier this week. And the thing about him that is so interesting is he's phenomenal at cutting to the rim, which is a skill that might seem really simple and basic, right? But it's really fundamental, especially to the way the game is played right now, where there's so much movement and off-ball screens and back cuts and that kind of thing. And he is just great at finding the precise moment when the guy defending him looks away, and he'll run as hard as humanly possible toward the rim. And the Warriors, to their credit, are great at finding him. And I wrote a story yesterday that got into, you know, the nuances of that. 84% of his shot attempts have been within 10 feet. You know,
that is incredible.
Yeah, he's shooting over 60. He's shooting 60.7% from the field. That's 16 percentage points above his career average. He's shooting 60% from 3-point range, yet he's averaging a career low in 3-point shots by far. He's shooting only about 15% of his shot attempts are 3-pointers, whereas earlier entering this season it was 35%. So he's known for being a great 3-point shooter, and now everyone's wondering, why aren't you shooting threes, especially when you're making them? It's because why would you shoot threes when you're making a bunch of wide open layups?
Right, when you're getting these gimme shots.
Yeah.
That's the other thing in your story that I loved was, I don't know exact the percentage, like more than half of his shots, he's not even dribbling.
Yeah, he doesn't even need to put the ball on the ground. 58% of his shots, he literally doesn't dribble. Right. And honestly, someone who has similar numbers to that is Klay Thompson, right, who does it in a different way. He works off the ball mainly to get jump shots, whereas Omri does back cuts to get toward the rim and get layups. So it's a little bit different, but he told me that he studied Klay in terms of how he works off the ball. And we had a really good conversation a couple days ago talking in depth about that. And here's our conversation.
To cut and work off the ball and work off screens seems like the biggest reason why you fit so well into this system. But do you think that it's been a natural fit, just that skill translating to this offense?
I mean, I think it's the offense. Makes it, yeah, nobody really was talking about my cutting as much. Sometimes you come into this beautiful system that we have, and you can bring it out of you. So it's mostly the system, man. I'm just playing hard, and I'm really not doing anything special. Just play hard, cut hard, and read the game and see what the game gives you. So mostly the system.
Where do you think you learned that skill, though? Because you obviously had that skill before you got here.
Right.
Growing up, was there a coach or?
No, it wasn't. You know, the game overseas is so much predicated about movement and cutting and moving without the ball.
Yeah.
Not as much as a one-on-one. So, you know, you come in at an 80-year-old, 70-year-old, when you start playing basketball, and that's all you learn.
Yeah.
Move, cut, pass. You know, you won't see ISO basketball almost never, in a junior team level. So everything is predicated on movement, and you're cutting, moving, moving around the ball. So become a second nature.
So when do you first remember learning about off-ball movement and that stuff?
So that's the whole point. Right?
Yeah. So like,
it's,
since
it's never really like, hey, let's talk about cutting today. You know,
yeah.
It's just, that's how we play the game. You know?
Yeah.
You pass, you cut, you move right after. You don't hold the ball. You don't hold the ball for more than half a second.
Yeah.
And now, like you see, the Spurs are doing it, and we're doing it, and you know, some good offensive teams are doing it. But this is how we learn. Like, you hold the ball, the coach is gonna be on your ass. You know.
Yeah.
And you know, it predicated because some, you know, the one-on-one game is not as developed overseas.
Yeah.
And you know, coaches are not really, you know, forcing to play one-on-one too. So it's like, you know, the egg and the chicken. So it's always going to be the same way.
Did you have a specific coach that comes to mind that was really harping on you about not holding the ball for too long and moving away from the ball?
Not really. No, I mean,
pretty much all of them? In Europe?
Yeah, pretty much all of them.
Yeah.
I see a lot of guys overseas that are playing that certain way, you know, playing that way.
Was that a tough transition going from that style of play to the NBA, where, especially when you first came in the league, it was more ISO driven?
I mean, when I came in the league, I remember our individual workouts going into the draft and all that was, you know, one-on-one in the post, one-on-one at the elbow, one-on-one at the, you know, top, you know, and I'd rather do that, you know, so,
right.
You know, it's just different, you know, and game changed over the, you know, the past 8-9 years to more like shooting, more movement and cutting. And
right.
You know, obviously to me, it just fit my system better.
Was that frustrating, you know, going through pre-draft workouts, knowing that you weren't really necessarily able to show what your best skills were?
Yeah, I feel like, you know, the whole process is simple. Sometimes the whole process is it's just, you know, I don't know how things are now, but you know, when I was there, I mean, it's not really a game situation, you know. It's not really cutting off the ball or playing. So, you know, I think the game has changed for the better. I mean, the one-on-one ISO is a very, you know, bad shot. Now we understand it's a very bad shot. You know, and, you want to shoot a contested two or a fadeaway two or even an open two.
Yeah.
I'd rather shoot an open three and a layup over that.
What was kind of the – I know you had several coaches in Sacramento, but what was kind of the offensive systems there?
The guy that I really liked was Pete Carrillo.
Okay.
I remember him from his – we still do some of the stuff that he do, that he did back in the day.
Who?
Pete Carrillo.
Oh, okay.
And he's all about spacing, you know. Back
was he an assistant in Sacramento?
Yeah.
He was
our – not an assistant necessarily, but he was like a consultant to the coaches.
Okay.
He was the guy that really, you know, put in the system. We still do some of the stuff that they did back in the day. And just moving and cutting, and you know, he was all about not holding the ball. And I loved it. You know, that was my best year in Sacramento.
Right. And
George Cowell too. George is very
pace and space.
Pace and space, yeah. He's very about not holding the ball and scoring early and attacking early. And then, you know, if you get a good shot, take it. Stuff like that.
So you don't really feel like you're necessarily doing that much different than you did in your days in Sacramento, right? Or do you feel like you're
no, our system is different than George. I mean,
what you like your skill set? You feel like is it?
I feel like it's very similar to what we're trying to do with George.
Yeah.
George was just you know, he understands the game at a very high level. It's just a different system, a different. You know, you can play the same system with different guys, and you're gonna get different looks. You know, so
right.
Sometimes when I play with, you know, the bench, you know, I get different looks. Sometimes when I play with, you know, KD, I get different looks. When I play with Steph, I get different looks. So the system is similar. You know, you cut, you move, you don't hold the ball. That's what, you know, a lot of, you know, great coaches are trying to do now. But you know, you get different looks and different lineups that you have on there. And coach always mix things up. And even in practice, like we'll run different lineups just to see what's out there and get used to it.
Before you came here watching Golden State, were there times where you're like, man, that'd be fun to be in that system, just with all the movement?
I had a lot of teammates over the years. They're like, hey, have you ever been approached by San Antonio Spurs or by the Warriors? And you know, sometimes I said yes, sometimes I said no, but you know, they're like, oh, you can really fit into that system. It's gonna be your game, and I'm happy. You know, it's a dream come true to play in that system, man. Those guys are so selfless. My job is easy. Like I said after the game. And, like, my job is just cut hard, you know, and and he'll pass to you. You don't see that often. And those guys are great, and they find me, and I just want to stay humble and work on my game and get better. But my job is very easy, and it's all great to those guys for finding me and the system that is really fit my game.
Is that why you haven't been taking a lot of threes? Because you've had so many easy buckets at the rim.
I've had success, I've had success early on, and I'm having success cutting, and sometimes I'm like. It's there for me, but at the same time, it's different line. Like, if you cut and you're open, why not keep doing it? Kind of expose what you can see out there. So it depends the lineup I play with, but at the same time, sometimes I'm having open shots that I need to take. So.
But what makes a good cutter?
Purpose. Cutting. It's more of a. It's more of like you reading the situation and going hard through your motion. Go hard. I go hard in practice on my cuts because these are the same movements I'm going to do in the game. Like KD and Steph shooting off the ball threes, off the dribble threes, these are the shots they're going to take in the game. I'm taking those shots and cutting, sitting in the corner and running to the rim. So go hard.
Just knowing exactly what you're doing. Did it take a while to get comfortable with that, just getting comfortable with the Warriors system?
No, it's
or was it
really
pretty easy,
smooth
learning
transition? Yeah. The good thing is that I played this summer with my national team. And every time I go back in the summer, there's this transition time that, all right, you played in the NBA, it's different. Now you play in Northern Europe, and the game is different. So I've had easier and smoother transition because I came in shape. And I wasn't really feeling great with my body yet, but now I'm starting to feel better with my body and kind of getting back to the old myself before the injuries and everything I've had last year. So I felt like it was smooth.
Has everything been going better than you ever expected for them to go this season? You've been in and out based off injuries and that sort of thing, but you've really started to establish yourself as a rotation guy.
One of the things I learned is that I don't really set a lot of expectations on myself because you set our expectations. There's things that are out of my control that I can't
last season.
Coming in and you get hurt last year, you come in. You don't know how much. Let's say, all right, I want to expect myself to average 10 points and be a part of. What if, things are not going my way? What if I'm not playing? There's things that are in my control. There's things that are not. And I always focus on what it is. And I always coach. It doesn't matter when you throw me in there, I'll be ready to go. Because it doesn't matter when you throw me in there. I can start or I can come off the bench in the last 2 minutes of the game and be ready to go. Because this is what I can control. This is my focus, always been my focus. Especially this year, I felt like I took a step forward, mentally, of being ready to go and being ready and whatever coach needed me to go. And I take it from there. I obviously set high goals when I'm playing, and I'm setting expectations when I'm playing, but this is the things that I can control. So I didn't know what to expect coming in, how things gonna be. I knew that if I come in and play hard and I'll get my chances. I'll do good and take it from there.
Do you watch a guy like Clay? Because he's obviously really good at that as well.
Right.
He's a phenomenal cutter. Never touches the ball, it seems.
Right.
Do you study a guy like that?
Yeah, I study Clay a lot. We have obviously a different game. I'm more curling and cutting to the rim for layups. He's more moving without the ball for a jump shot.
Right.
But this is something it's really predicated on our movement. Sending a down pick on Clay, everybody's so worried about him, Steph, KD, the guys that are real shooters. So there's a lot of different, points around them, just because of everything around them. Yeah, space and just everybody's so focused. Like, you see somebody going down screen on Clay, Clay's coming down. You got to be aware of it. If you're not, you're going to knock him down. So this is where you can, come down and, do all the little things you can do around them.
Cool, man. I appreciate you taking the time, man.
Thank you, brother.
So yeah, as you can tell, obviously a really humble guy, not really willing to admit that he does anything special. But you talk to anyone else, and they say he's the best one of the best in the NBA at what he does, which is cutting to the basket. And I'm personally kind of curious to see what happens to him going forward with Draymond being out, because there's a numbers crunch here. There's just not minutes to give him with Draymond in the fold and Jordan Bell doing what he's doing. And it's hard to not give a guy like Omri minutes when he's playing as well as he is. But, you know, he's already resigned to that. He's comfortable with the fact that he's going to have infrequent minutes. And why he's been such an asset to this team this season is he's a true professional and has been, you know, ready whenever they have needed him. And that is such an asset, especially considering that this is a guy on a veteran minimum deal who, you know, didn't get a lot of interest in free agency last summer. So another example of Bob Myers doing his thing and pulling one out right there. So, but we have a big game coming up in a couple days, Christmas Day game, primetime game. Everyone's going to be watching it against Cleveland. I'm really excited about it. I don't even mind missing hanging out with my folks who will be in town, because this is the premier game of the regular season calendar. What do you think is going to happen in this one?
Well, I think NBA fans might be a little disappointed. You're missing Steph Curry. Isaiah Thomas is still out as well. But you can't get away from it's Warriors Cavs. A lot of folks would say that this is the beginning of the regular season, right, of sorts. So I'm still looking at it to be the crowd is going to be there. They're going to be involved. Draymond will be back. So I'm
not Steph.
Not Steph. Yes.
Draymond.
Yeah. So let's say no Steph, no Isaiah Thomas, but you've got LeBron, you've got Draymond, you've got Clay, Durant. Cleveland got off to a bit of a slow start, but I think they're starting to find their groove. And now they've got a lot to look forward to now with Thomas projected to come back in early January.
Yeah. And the big storyline, especially with Steph, is going to be LeBron versus KD on that primetime stage, because they have quite a history. You know, they obviously went head to head in the finals about a half decade ago when Durant was in Oklahoma City and they lost to LeBron's Heat. And then Durant got a little bit of a redemption by not only winning the title over LeBron's Heat in June, but dominating that series, hitting that big shot in game three and winning finals MVP. So the question is LeBron going to want a little bit of redemption? Yes, it's just the regular season, but anyone who watched that Christmas game last year in Cleveland knows that this isn't any ordinary game. It's going to get heated. That one got very heated, very emotional. It did not feel like a regular season game. I can tell you, that game was a lot more intense than most of the playoff games that the Warriors played, come postseason time. So it's going to be a fun one for sure.
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't know if the players love playing on Christmas Day. I think it's great for the fans. You're with their family. You've got the turkey, you've got the ham, and you get to sit down and you get to watch the premier players play. This season, maybe accepted, no Curry, but it's you know, do the players like it? What do they get up for these games?
I think they like it a lot more when they're at home,
right?
I mean, they're very thankful that they're in Oakland for this one, because especially since it's a noon tip, you know, they can go play and, you know, go hang out with their families by, you know, a decent hour. They're gonna still get a ton of quality time with their families. I know I'm happy for the same reason, even though I have to write for a couple hours after they're done with the game. But it's a lot better. I can tell you from my own experience, it was kind of a low point for me last season, my first year on the beat, just kind of looking at my life and being like, man, I'm in Cleveland in a Marriott on Christmas Day by myself, like kind of looking around like, feeling all existential, like, why am I doing this?
I've been there with you on Thanksgiving and New Year's. When I covered the Warriors, they were not marquee enough to be on the Christmas Day bill.
yeah, but no, I obviously love the job, and it's a part of the job, so it comes with the territory, but I'm not complaining. And so I'm just curious, I know we don't really do a lot of predictions on this podcast, but just for fun's sake, what do you think happens? Do you think the Warriors can pull this one out?
I think the Warriors, and I don't think it's going to be that close.
You don't? Why do you say that?
I just think that they're going to be motivated to put on a show in front of the home crowd.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I honestly think that it's not going to be close because of that reason, but also because I just think they're better than they were last season. Yes, Steph is not available, but they're playing so well right now. They've actually been, in some ways they have, I hate to say this, this is kind of sacrilege, they have been better in a lot of statistical ways with Curry out, and that's just because they're focusing more and they're not making as many stupid passes and silly fouls because of the kind of being on pins and needles with Curry out. And I also just don't think the Cavs are as good as they were last season.
Right, you know, certainly.
Obviously, Isaiah Thomas is not available right now, and Kyrie Irving's a pretty darn good player.
That's what I'm saying. Kyrie had great games, had some great games against the Warriors.
Yeah, and he still does, as we saw, you know, recently in Boston. He's like any guy in the league outside of LeBron, he gives the Warriors the most trouble. I don't see Isaiah Thomas, even when he's healthy, giving them the same type of difficulties. But it'll be a good one, and we'll be back next week. Reviewing that one and getting into the rest of this crazy schedule. So thanks for joining us, and thank you to Omri for joining us as well. It was great chatting with him. This show is part of the San Francisco Chronicle Podcast Network. Our theme music is Thank You for Playing by Ryan Little, courtesy of the Free Music Archive. For more Warriors coverage, you can follow me on Twitter at @con_cron, @con_CHRON, and Janie at @Janie_Hugh, @JANNY_HU. Check out all of our coverage at sfchronicle.com.